This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
All right, I'd like to welcome everybody back into another episode of the Eurosnob Podcast. My name is Ian Smith, and I'm joined, as pretty much always this season, by Alex John. Alex, how's it going?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
Not bad, not bad. Also joined, you know, really becoming a mainstay on our program for you guys, joined by Billy O, the media hitman, as we dubbed him in our last episode. What's going on, dude?
How are you doing, boys? It's always good to be back. I feel honored and pleasured to be asked to do this every week so far, and I probably will jump higher on the media hit list this week. So,
you're already pretty high up on their list, I'm sure. So, you gotta pull off something pretty big to move up that list, I'm sure.
Yeah, I have an interesting perspective on one situation, so it should be fun.
All right, beautiful. We'll all look forward to that. So I wanted to kind of jump back. I know it's been a little while since we had a podcast about the Arsenal. We were tied up with that U.S. men's national team debacle a couple of weeks ago, not to pick at any scabs or anything. But we're going to take it back a little bit to really the last game we haven't talked about yet, and that was the Watford loss. We'll start off with you, Alex, man. Where do you come out from that game?
Oh, that was a frustrating one. I can admit I didn't see the whole game. I saw most of it, but just kind of the way we capitulated, and you know, there were some decisions that went against us for sure. The Richarlison dive, and then Troy Deeney possibly being offside. But it was just frustrating because we had the early lead and we didn't take advantage. I think we had the lead in that game, right? We started with the lead.
Yeah, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so. It was one of those where, you know, Watford's been doing well this season so far. They're on the top end of the table, you know, pushing top six, top seven. But it was a frustrating loss, and I feel like a lot of problems that are commonly discussed amongst the Arsenal faithful kind of resurface. So it was a blow because I had thought that we were kind of sustaining some positive momentum and kind of set us back to ground zero, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, for me on that game, and again, I'll admit I didn't see most of it either. I was at work, so I have an excuse. But it was kind of typical, you know, stereotypical Arsenal, right? I mean, get out to a good lead, don't put a team away, collapse at the end, not hold up to physical challenges. I mean, really fit the whole narrative the media likes to throw out there about us. And I know we've got some. There were certainly some post-game comments made about that I'm sure a few of us have an opinion about. But really, that's kind of where it was for me. It was a disappointing game. And, it's sad that, once again, it fits that narrative. But then again, let's be real. The media tries to make everything about Arsenal fit that narrative. So, Bill, what are your thoughts, man?
The game that, you know, most of the game that I saw, because I caught definitely the Richarlison dive, I definitely thought that was a dive. I felt like they could have got a penalty ahead of that as well. And I feel that it just does fit that narrative. I think that in that game specifically, they provided that media narrative to be true. But a lot of other times that narrative is kind of pushed to be made true when it's not. So the game was frustrating, and I agree with the statement about it being like the same old, because that's what I was frustrated with. I, like, you know, AJ said, thought that they were off to a good start, you know, or not a good start, but like getting back some momentum and getting it going. And then all of a sudden, boom, same old Arsenal. And then, you know, the Deeney comments are just absurd, in my opinion. I don't understand why he's making them, what purpose they serve. If it makes him feel better about himself, that's great, because that's what it looked like to me. So I'm not sure what you guys want to add to that.
Yeah, just getting right into his comments, I guess. He went on Sky Sports, I think it was, after the fact, or BT or one of those. And he said something, you know, he said that Arsenal lack cojones and that, like, we're not mentally tough. And he knew if he just got in and got physical that we would somehow, you know, bristle away from that. And of course, people kind of lap that up and, you know, just kind of suit an agenda and say, oh, see, even fellow pros think Arsenal's soft and this and that. I mean, first of all, just from a professional standpoint, I think it's incredibly disrespectful for a pro to go on after a game against a team and then spout BS about them. I mean, you didn't see and Paul Merson said this, and Paul Merson's usually wrong about everything, but he was right about this. Like, after Man City beat Watford 6-0, you didn't see Man City players go on Sky Sports after the fact and talk about how Watford had no cojones and stuff like that. But somehow, because it's Arsenal, it's just acceptable. But at the same time, you also kind of dig your own grave with the results. I mean, ultimately, can only blame the media so much. Like, if you're performing in such a way where you even put yourself in that position, then that's kind of your own problem too. So I'm kind of caught in two minds, and, you know, I was frustrated about the performance, frustrated about the comments and how the comments blew up, but it was mostly just 3 points squandered, especially because it was a week where a couple of our rivals dropped points. So we could have taken advantage of that. And that's the biggest point of contention and irritation for me. What about you, Ian?
Yeah. I mean, the comments they're stupid. And really the fact that they were picked up and run so much by the media it's stupid itself, but you know, we all know the media is, it's all about clicks and traffic, right? And what's one thing that Arsenal fans are good at? Clicking on things and giving articles web traffic. I mean, look at every single Twitter poll that ever involved anybody from Arsenal. They always win because the Arsenal Twitter army clicks on everything that has to do with Arsenal. So that's why media runs with it. But the fact that Deeney came out and said that stuff, man, it's a completely irrelevant player. A player who's been irrelevant for his entire career plays for a team that, quite frankly, yeah, they're right now, what are they, sixth on the table, seventh on the table? Sixth right now. But how much do you see them talked about? You still see Liverpool talked about as being a title contender, and they're in ninth.
Yeah.
I mean, they're at Watford's having a really, really good season, but they're still a completely irrelevant team. And he's a completely irrelevant player. That's all it is. It's just a look at me moment trying to draw some attention to him. And yeah, it worked, but not really, because it just put attention on Arsenal, really not Watford. So the whole thing was stupid, but it's really what you get when the media is so driven at, you know, trying to get Arsenal fans to go crazy, because that's what they try and do.
It fed into this whole, like, oh, Arsenal don't like it physical. Like, oh, if you get stuck in on Arsenal and show more passion than them, then that's somehow going to do something. It fell into all these BS, like, cliched narratives. So that's kind of what I hated about it. It's just like, oh, now a player is spouting this shit. Like, no, it's not down to getting stuck in. It's about not executing during the game. It's about not being able to break down a defense. It's about, you know, not being able to move the ball quickly, and all that good, genuine analysis gets lost in the shuffle when this becomes the main story of the game.
Yeah. But I don't know. You're not wrong. It's just, like I said, the whole thing is just dumb. I mean, it fits the English football narrative also, though, because that's what they care about. They care about passion. And when a lower level team takes a point or beats one of the top teams, it's all about the passion that they showed and the toughness that they showed. It's really nothing tactical, because honestly, the English media you rarely see good bits of tactical analysis out there, at least for me. I mean, maybe it's there and I'm just not looking in the right places. But the only thing I ever see in the English media about tactics is, you know, passion this, toughness that, get stuck in this, get stuck in there. You know, and honestly, did Deeney really have that big of an effect on the game because he was physical and got stuck in? I mean, whatever. Like I said, he's irrelevant. Watford's irrelevant. So for me, I'm moving on. So.
Yeah, the frustrating thing, and Bill, I mean, you can speak on this too, just dropping points to that kind of team is what irritates me, you know?
Well, you're expecting to go into that game when you looked at this run of games ahead, you know, you were like, all right, you know, Watford, then, you know, you keep going with Red Star, which is going to be a tough game, but you should win. Everton's doing pretty bad, you know, Norwich after that, you had a nice run of games before that, a nice run of games ahead. So you're thinking you're going to capitalize on those points. And, you know, you just don't. And I agree with what both of you said regarding how the media does things, you know, across the pond. You know, Phil Neville said something. I was trying to find it on Twitter here to exactly what he said, but there's just like some things there where there's just like a bias against Arsenal, and we can go into it over and over again, but it's just there. And then when an English player from another team makes comments about Arsenal, it's definitely passed off as not being, you know, a problem. So, you know, they always kind of, you know, save face for their own and things like that. And, you know, I guess that's just something that's going to have to be expected. I'm not, you know, but as for the comments, I would love to move past it, because the more attention we give that guy, that's exactly what he wants. So
that's bad. That's a very fair point. So we'll move on to the next game that we had. It was the Europa League game against Red Star. Mm-hmm. Kind of the same lineup that we've seen all through the Europa League so far. A lineup that, you know, I've really seen Arsene get a lot of criticism as far as where he's playing people, like positionally. And quite honestly, I don't agree with the criticism there. I think that it's just a matter of necessity. I mean, for example, Reece Nelson playing wingback. Yeah, obviously he'd be better where they're playing Theo. But are you really going to play Theo at wingback, and is he really going to play defensively? He's not going to. So I think out of necessity, he's been forced into some decisions as far as where to play players. Really, we just don't have enough options. And sure, put that on him. That's fine. I get it. So I kind of want to throw it to you guys. Bill, we'll go to you first, man. How are you, you know, where do you come out on the lineups that, and the teams that we've been playing in that competition so far, specifically the lineup we had at Red Star?
I mean, in terms of the team selection, I'm totally fine with it. It's exactly what I expected it to be. I'm kind of glad it is what it is. They look very comfortable when they play for the most part, but they don't, you know, you don't get to see a lot of the, you know, other stars kind of come into the fold. So you get to see what the reserve kind of guys are going to do starting in that competition. I like seeing the players there. I mean, Nelson at right wing back, I'm not really like a big fan of it, but like you said, Theo Walcott, I mean, what can you do? You can't put him back there. There's just absolutely no way. I think he's just a novelty player. It was a great assist for that goal in that game. Great little interplay with him and Jack. But, you know, in terms of consistency, I think that's what he's missing. So I don't mind them playing, because they can pull off moments against teams like that. You just hope that he kind of grows into the season and the rest of the team can. I think Nelson's time will come to move up. I'm just glad he's actually playing so many youngsters and they're actually doing pretty well. So I'm really impressed with that. And I don't mind the selection whatsoever. What do you think, AJ?
Yeah, I see what you guys are saying. And the thing with Theo is, yeah, if you don't play him in that position, you can't play him at all. And I think on the wages he's on, and just given how long he's been at the club, you figure Arsenal's going to find a way to kind of get him in there somehow, because he's not going to get into the Premier League 11, you know, our best 11 that's going to play week in, week out in the Premier League. So you do have to get him in. You have to get Giroud in. I look at the Europa League as an opportunity to get a lot of the squad guys minutes to keep them fresh. You certainly look at Jack. You look at Debushi, Holding, Elneny, all these guys who wouldn't be playing week in, week out are getting game time to get fresh. And I think that's important. And then, you know, talking about Nelson, it's frustrating because you do want to see him in his best position. And I think he can shine there, but I don't think it's necessarily bad for his development to play a bit more of a defensive role, to kind of learn how to defend at this level. Same with Maitland-Niles. And I think, you know, Ian and I, we talked about this before, kind of Maitland-Niles' versatility potentially being a hindrance, you know, as opposed to an asset, just because you can move him around. He might not have a set position. But I think in this instance, with this squad, with this set of games that we have, you know, not just the Europa League, but then also the Carabao Cup and these lower tier competitions, you know, why not put him there? You know, you don't want to risk him on Real or Kolasinac in these sort of games. So I have no problem with it. I like seeing the young guys in there. I like seeing Joe Willock in there. I thought he really looked good. He's got the composure to play in central midfield. And I mean, the performance itself wasn't anything to write home about, but like you said, Bill, that interplay to create that goal, that's what you tune in to watch Arsenal for. Like that moment of genius, you know, amongst three players who admittedly are not at the top of their game right now.
Well, we talked about it on one of the pods before earlier. I don't know. It might've been the one at the start of the season about, or maybe last year, about Walcott and his goal production, on how he had 20 goals. And we were like, what ones do you remember? And the thing is it's like a novelty player. Like that goal was an amazing goal. And of course he's involved because he can pull off moments like that. It's just, they're not done with consistency. And believe it or not, if you like look back at other games, when he does track back, he's a very good player, but it's just, he does it in spurts. He'll do it for a couple of games and then you won't see it again for a while. And then he'll do it again and then you won't see it for a while. A lot of people lined it up with contracts and things like that. But, you know, the game overall, really the first half was very boring. I can tell you that from the start, it was extremely boring. Jack grew into the game in the second half, and that's really what turned it around, was his play. I mean, he broke three defenders with that little move he did. I mean, he looks leaner. I'm liking what he's doing more forward. So I don't mind the squad that they've been using at all. And I think it's been nice for getting through the competition in the group.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. And I think Maitland-Niles has been, for me, kind of a standout. And I know he's been a little bit inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Let's be real, he's been out of position. But I love the confidence, the drive, you know, all the things that his game brings. It's relatively understated. It's not anything overly flashy, but he just does a lot of things really, really well. And I think he's been one of our most consistent players in that competition. I mean, you talk about Theo and Giroud, and they've been completely anonymous until the one moment where they, you know, where they work a little bit of magic and find the back of the net. I mean, and it's kind of, for me, along with Maitland-Niles, Wilshere's been, you know, been really starting to grow back into his form. And he's not, you know, obviously he's never going to have the explosiveness he used to have, but he does still show some of that. I mean, man, that turn was something we haven't seen out of him in so long. And it's just kind of funny that with his return to form, on his way back to form, also kind of comes back a little bit of Wenger ball. You know, not saying it's 100% tied into him, but I think it has a lot to do with him, because he's, you know, he's one of our more creative players. He's one of those players that can drive at defenses, somebody that we really don't have out of midfield.
I guess the problem with Jack is, I mean, with the Wenger ball thing, I mean, we really won't know until we see him with the first 11. But with the first 11, I'm not sure where you put him, because I don't think you can play a Wilshere Xhaka midfield. I think that is too one-dimensional for me. Wilshere doesn't have quite the box-to-box engine than Jack does, and I think there's just a general lack of athleticism with that midfield. I think you leave yourself a little bit too exposed. You could use Wilshere to spell Ozil, perhaps, you know, in one of those top three spots and have him play a little bit closer to goal. But then obviously then you're losing your best creative player. So the thing with Jack is I really don't know where he fits. I mean, he's a great option to have to, you know, like against Everton, which we'll get to obviously, but, you know, coming off the bench late and providing that extra security in midfield and creativity. But it's an interesting dilemma, but it does make me happy as an Arsenal fan just to see him getting back to his best. And Ian, like you said, he's not going to have the explosiveness, but he doesn't lose the touch. And that, you know, that immediate thought to turn and go forward with the ball, which I think a lot of our midfielders struggle with. Coughlin. So, you know, the sorry, this is something caught in my throat. I hate when that happens, but, you know, overall, I'm excited for Jack. I temper my enthusiasm just a little bit, just because we've seen this from him where he looks to be getting back to where he was, but then there's a setback. But Bill, where are you at with the Wilshere enthusiasm at this point?
I'm full on board the Jack Wilshere locomotive at the moment. I think he just, I know he's injury prone, and we all know this. It's written all over the place, and that's always the worry, and it's always going to be the worry, unfortunately. but he looks like leaner. He just has a different look about him, and the explosiveness, it may come back. You don't know, but the intelligence is going to get stronger. And with that move to break away with three people, you need a little bit of oomph, but that was a very smart play with what he did with his feet. So that's, he's never going to lose that. And that's going to keep propelling him. I like using him. I personally think if you would have to play him with Xhaka, you'd have to bend the back three, go to a back four and play a Xhaka, Wilshire, Ramsey trio, I think, in the middle, if you don't use Jack in the Ozil role, which I, you know, you definitely can, because you alluded to that point. But I believe that, you know, you would have to play them in midfield three. I think that would provide enough cover. You'd have your back four ready to go. The flat, you know, the flanks can still go up, Bellerin, Monreal, or Kolasinac, whatever. And then, you know, you'd have your front three ahead of you. So you could continue to do that if you wanted. But I think that's really the only way that that would work. But Jack has to start to be integrated. If they take their time, that's fine, because you want him around in that January, February run of games always, because that always seems to be the turning point in the season. And I'd like to see more of him, but I'm glad on how he's kind of easing him back. But I think he's done very well.
Yeah, I mean, for me, what you just said there, Bill, brings up a really interesting dilemma as far as what this team does moving forward tactically. I mean, you said that, like, you're kind of stuck with a conundrum of, okay, if you stay in the 3-4-3 that we're playing now, where do you fit Jack into the team? Where do you fit Ramsey into the team? Because Ramsey's been a pretty important player for us. You know, do you slot him in next to Xhaka? Do you fit Jack in that? You know what I mean? There's still questions there. But then if you go back to the 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, whatever you want to call it, you're still faced with that dilemma of, you know, are you pushing Ozil back out to a wing? And I don't necessarily think that that's a recipe for success either. You know, it's, I don't know which way that we should go. Honestly, I think that, okay, let's be honest, the Everton game isn't really a good way to measure where we're at, because they're an absolute dumpster fire at this point in time. But I think the creativeness that we saw out of that front three, where Ozil isn't really on a wing, he's still relatively central as one of those front three. I think with them being that close together, being able to work off of each other, that just shows a bit of dynamism that we haven't seen. I mean, like you said, it brought back some Wenger ball. We haven't seen that from an Arsenal side in a really, really long time. And going back to a 4-2-3-1, my concern is you see Alexis slide way too wide, and then if Ozil's on the wing, or, you know what I mean? I think it takes away the ability of that front three to work closely together. So I really don't know where Arsenal goes from that. I mean, Alex, do you have any kind of opinion on that?
Well, what Bill mentioned is interesting with the 4-3-3. I mean, you could almost maybe shift it to like a 4-3-2-1, almost like a Christmas tree formation, you know, and where you have your four in the back, then you have the three in midfield, but then you have Ozil and Alexis kind of not playing, they're not playing wide, they're playing more central, and then right at the tip you have Lacazette. Like, I guess the only problem is that maybe you almost clog up the midfield too much that way, and you don't have a lot of natural width. But at the same time, I think, you know, to Bill's point, you do kind of give yourself the ability to dominate midfield. I mean, just think about going into a big away game and you've got Xhaka, Ramsey, Wilshire, Ozil, you know, all so good on the ball and, you know, being able to dictate things, and you still have the killer goal threat with Alexis and Lacazette. So I think, I say this because that's what I would like to see. I don't necessarily know if Wenger will do that. I guess the one thing that maybe would alter my opinion is the fact that Wenger has shown when Jack is healthy, he's going to try and get him in somehow, some way. You know, if he truly thinks Jack's ready to go, he'll try to pigeonhole him in somehow. But, you know, to Ian's point, you know, Ramsey is such an important player for us too. You don't want to disrupt what he does, which is get forward, get in the box. I mean, against Everton, yeah, he missed some chances, but he was fantastic for most of the game, in my opinion. Am I blinded by my Ramsey love here?
Not blinded at all, man. I'm with you there.
I mean, he made some incredible runs. He got into the box. He could have had two or three goals, honestly, on a different day. So it's tough, but it's good for the manager to have these dilemmas where you finally have tons of, you know, good players in those positions who can help you. And I think that's one thing where the Europa League has been really good for us, actually, is not only keeping our first 11 fresh because they're not playing two games a week, but also getting these other guys fit so they can jump in and contribute. And I think that's where you're going to start to see Spurs and Liverpool especially, you know, start to hurt, because these guys are playing meaningful games twice a week. It does add up, you know?
Absolutely. And it's one of those things where they were kind of even doing that last year a little bit. And, you know, we certainly had concerns that they would falter in that way last year, and they didn't. So, I mean, with those teams, when they're going on 2 years in a row of that, I mean, there's not a lot of depth in either of those squads. I mean, let's be real. Liverpool does have Oxlade-Chamberlain on the bench, so they can throw him into the team, and he's a player that could jump into any 11 in the Premier League, right?
Sure.
So they've got some incredible squad depth with him on the bench.
Yeah, no, he's been keeping benches warm for a few years now. So
yeah. So I mean, obviously, it's one of those things where, like you said, Alex, it's a good dilemma. It's a good problem to have when you have players in form that you want to try and find a way to get on the field at the same time. But it's also not a bad thing to like you said, bring Jack in off the bench and every once in a while let him spell for Ozil. It's, you know, it's not a bad thing.
And I think that's a good role for him right now, where you're not putting too much pressure on him to immediately become the savior again, you know, because people are already saying, oh, Wilshire for England for the World Cup. I'm like, just let him play 2 or 3 months straight without getting hurt, and then we can talk. But I know we're talking about midfield, and I know someone on this panel here has some thoughts about a player who's been getting a little bit of stick, because we were talking about the Everton game, and obviously there was some discussion about Everton's first goal and whether this person was partially responsible, and that would be Granit Xhaka. And I know Bill's been bursting at the seams to get this out, so I'm just going to throw it to you and let you do your thing, man.
Listen, the criticism straight off, you know, I'm going to say this first off. The criticism against Xhaka is fair in that he's having a poor season. The reasons behind that, though, are, I think, getting a little skewed in one direction, and they should be more centralized in their opinions on it, because the one, you know, the goals that he's been giving up look very bad. They do. But a lot of the times, the pairings that he's had to have when they made this formational change last year have kind of put more emphasis on him being more mobile, and we know that he's not. That's why I was alluding to that 4-3-3 of sorts, where you kind of put, you know, Xhaka and Jack, and then Jack could kind of move forward with Ramsey if he wanted to, and then you would have Ozil right ahead of him, and then Alexis and Lacazette, like, right there, like almost like two up top in a way. Or you could move Ozil, like you said, and Alexis behind Lacazette and run it like that Christmas tree formation. There's a couple of different options there, and that's why I think he'd be more, you know, efficient in that formation, because he would have Jack there driving forward and coming back. He would have Ramsey also there going forward and coming back. You know, so the criticism against him, you know, for me is a little unjustified, because everybody's saying he's so bad, bring in Coughlin this, Coughlin that, El Nene, you know, passion, desire. And I'm like, the guy provides assists as well. I think that, you know, he needs more assistance in midfield. That's why I was suggesting the change of formation before as well. That was another reason, thinking about what would best suit him, because he is, you know, a vital part of the team in terms of his, you know, assisting ability and passing ability. And I think you paid a lot for him, so you might as well try to use him the best you can. And if you can do the formation, do the formation. But, you know, I think that, you know, maybe he does need a rest. Maybe give him a rest for a little bit and see how he does when he comes back. But what are the alternatives? That's the real question. Like, who do you put there that's going to be as effective per game? And if somebody says Coughlin, I'm gonna leave.
Really tempted just to say Coughlin to see it. Yeah. Absolutely. I think you make a good point there. It's like, what's the other alternative, right? Because really, for me, the other alternative would be to give Maitland-Niles a little go in that position, you know? Mm-hmm. I would like to see it. I don't think Wenger's quite ready to. I would love to see it personally because I think that kid has a huge future. But has the criticism been warranted? Absolutely. I think he's been really poor this season. No, I don't think Coughlin should come in and start over him or Elneny should start over him. But in all honesty, yeah, he's been poor. He's given the ball away. He's been, you know, this passing ability that he normally has. We haven't really seen that as much. Everton's goal, I think that's 50-50 on him and on, I believe it was Mertesacker that played him the ball. Correct me if I'm wrong, but
no, you're right. Yeah, it was
right. I do think it's 50-50 on that. I think it was not a good decision to play him the ball in that position, but I think it was also a really, really terrible touch that Xhaka took that put himself in a bad, in an even worse position. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm a cause and effect guy. So, like, I look at it as if he didn't get the pass, he doesn't make the awkward touch because he wasn't ready for the pass. And he was surrounded by three guys. Like, why can't he just boot it out?
I'll tell you what, man, you're at that level. You need to be prepared to get the ball at every second of the game.
I agree with that, too.
And you know what? If somebody gives you a bad ball and you know that you're in a really dangerous position, like you said, just get it out of there. Just, like, chip the ball up the line, something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Don't – you know, I think one of his problems is he gets caught dwelling on the ball too often. And I don't know if that's necessarily a him problem, if that's an Arsene philosophy, trying to play their way out of trouble problem. You know, I don't know. But he just hasn't been at the level that we've needed him. And honestly, yeah, I think – They need to take him out of the side for a Premier League game. Give him a break. Just say, you know what, dude, like, just take a breather, relax, and we'll get you back in next game and get your shit together. Like, he's a really vital player to our side. I mean, he brings a type of passing ability that passing from deep that really we need. You know?
Yeah, we don't have anyone like him who can spread the ball from deep, you know, not only just playing it through the lines, but those cross field passes, you know, when the fullbacks are pushing up or those balls over the top. I mean, he can hit that with the precision that no one else has. And I mean, his shooting ability, I think, is really underrated. You know, he's often putting it on target. I mean, that's how we got the equalizer, wasn't it? When his shot was parried by Jordan Pickford and then Monreal tapped it in. So, you know, that's something he brings to the side. And to both your guys' points, there have been too many instances this year where he's dwelled on the ball or he's given the ball away in a bad spot. I mean, I remember he did against Leicester. You know, he obviously did against Everton. There's been a few other instances where, you know, his lack of mobility has been exposed because he receives the ball and he's often the only one in midfield receiving the ball. So if you press him, his lack of mobility is really kind of put on display, and that's not entirely his fault, but you know, you do have to compensate for that or adjust your positioning or do something. So, you know, but the problem is, like, if you take him out of the side, you do lose your only deep lying playmaker because you don't have Santi. Obviously you can't put Coughlin in there because he can't pass or do anything or play football.
He can run.
I mean, even that he falls down doing though, so you know, like, I mean, Maitland-Niles is actually, it's an interesting shout because, you know, Ian, you mentioned like whether Wenger's not ready for that. And Wenger said something, he said like Maitland-Niles is on the toes of some of these first team players. Like, he's really close to getting a chance. I really hope that's true because we know he can pass. He's, you know, he's got a good engine. He can run, you know, like I wouldn't feel too bad putting in a Maitland-Niles for one of the, you know, for a game against one of the lower table teams. And like you said, Ian, get Xhaka a rest. But I think Xhaka's also felt the pressure to be like a creative type from deep and maybe handle more of that load up until Ozil's gotten back just recently. So maybe Ozil being back lessens some of that creative load. What do you guys think?
I think it does. And I mean, one thing about Xhaka too, that's, you know, just to kind of put my final thought on him for now, his one-footedness really hurts him too when he is in that position with his back, you know, when he's facing our own goal and getting pressed. defenders know which direction he's going to turn because he will only use his left foot. So I think that's another thing that he gets himself into trouble a lot with. But the point you made about Ozil, you know, maybe that is the case. I haven't honestly watched him that closely to have an opinion on whether I think it's him trying to overcompensate or what. It certainly could be, you know, you would understand it, right? If your team's, you know, kind of struggling to create goals because your main creative force isn't there. Yeah. I mean, it's only normal and human nature to kind of overcompensate for that.
I mean, yeah, that's why I was saying before about the formational. I think it's a formational problem for him at the moment. I think you need to support him and get a more robust midfield, get Jack and Ramsey both in there next to him in some way, or just in front of him, or Jack on the side of him, Ramsey just in front, however you want to do it. But having him be back there, he can still play make from long distance like he likes to. He can still come forward, shoot from distance, create those rebounded type hard shots that are low and driven into the ground that hopefully somebody can jump on like Monreal did before. Some of them go in sometimes. But, you know, in response to, you know, is he kind of trying to overcompensate for Ozil? I think if he's designed to be in there to playmake and Ozil isn't there, I definitely think he feels an added responsibility, especially in the formation, because the ball is constantly coming to him and he's trying to control it from left to right. I think that it kind of leaves him exposed. As AJ said, you know, they plan for it, they get on him and they press him and they know which way he's going to go because of how he plays and his dominant foot. And I think it kind of leaves him out. That's why I think a lot of the criticism is unfair, because I think he needs to be kind of, you know, the formation needs to be set right or give him a little bit more support than what's going on.
And just to go back to the playmaking and kind of the reason that I think it does play a factor is because one of his best games was the FA Cup final against Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And in that game, you saw him playing a little bit deeper. You saw him breaking up play and also starting attacks really quickly. But you had Ozil, in the side and then, you know, taking care of that things higher up the pitch. And I think it allowed Xhaka to kind of do what he does best. He got an unfair rap early last season about not being a good tackler, but really towards the end of the season, I think he was really hitting his stride. And I think it did have to do with the fact that he wasn't being asked to do everything in midfield. You know, I think there was a healthy balance with him and Ramsey and then Ozil. So I think Ozil being back in the side is really going to help in that respect. But I mean, Ozil being back also means we finally get to see the trinity of our attack all healthy and playing at once. And you saw how that worked against Everton, you know, and it was beautiful to watch at times.
Yeah, it was absolutely, like you said, beautiful. The only thing I think I tweeted it was like the heart eye emoji and the drooling emoji, because that was me watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. I think that pretty much says it all. It's just the interplay, the movement, it's just like they had a pace to their play. And I don't necessarily mean running fast in an English media sense of pace, but just a pace to how they were thinking the game, their runs, their spacing. They were just at a completely different level, and Everton had absolutely no idea what to do with any one of them, let alone all three. And it was absolutely glorious. And, you know, how amazing would it be if we can keep this group together and bring back some of that Wenger ball that we all know and love and miss. And that's, oh man.
You're just in love with the Wenger ball that might not ever be coming back.
But that's why we all love Arsenal though, isn't it? I mean, that's why we all fell in love with this club.
It definitely is. And the sad thing is we might only get to see this for two more months.
Oh, I know. I'm going to enjoy it while it's there. Shit, even if Everton's the only game we see it for a real long time, I'm going to live on that one for a while. I mean, what do you, Alex, man, obviously it's going to be, it may not be quite as over the top as my reaction, but I'm sure it's something along the same lines, right?
Oh yeah, no, I mean, some, yeah, like you said, if you go back and look at some of the goals, that second goal especially, the Ozil header, you know, you had Lacazette pick the ball up right around midfield. He kind of drove it in, then he found Alexis, and you know, his movement allowed Alexis to have a little bit of a lane to get, you know, to find a cross, and then you had Ozil take that vacated space where the striker should be and make that near, you know, make that near post run. And it was beautiful. And it was easy. And then, you know, Lacazette's third goal, you know, the movement there where Ozil went out wide and then Ramsey kind of made a motion for Lacazette to go near post and pull, you know, near post and find some space in the box. I mean, just there was an understanding there, and it sucks that it's taken this long. And, you know, we've certainly dropped some points in the process, but shit, man, that was fun. It was fun. That's what it should be about, right, Bill?
Well, definitely what it should be about. I hope that you placed that bet on that Rooney goal, because I did that poll, and 38% of people on Twitter who voted in my poll said that they didn't think Rooney was going to score. I was like, that's impossible. We all knew it was coming. So that put a damper in the, because I think Arsenal were rampant. They were really flying, and that goal came out of nowhere. You knew it was going to come, but you know, you weren't really expecting it that early. I think that kind of threw it off. The Monreal breathed life, and then in that second half, man, they just, that was the Wenger ball that Ian wants so bad. They were fluid. The Ozil goal, didn't Sanchez do the same thing to Ozil once before? Like, I thought that goal looked so familiar. It was just nice, crisp. Ozil came in, headed it right in. It was like deja vu to me, because it was just beautiful, like back when like Alexis first came.
I think it was against Watford last season.
Maybe it was. That is the goal I'm thinking of. Okay.
I think Ozil got the header right about the penalty spot.
Right. So, I mean, it was beautiful. The Lacazette goal was amazing. Ramsey telling him to go over to that near post was awesome, because that created even more space to give Ozil an option on who to pick. The defender was stuck in the middle of the two, so he didn't know where to go. And then Ramsey got his goal. Sanchez got his goal, so I hope that he's happy and, you know, content, not too angry. But it was an overall very beautiful game to see. First half, if Rooney doesn't score, I think honestly they maybe win this game like 6-7. I think it could have went that way. But that Rooney goal staved off the attack for about 20-25 minutes for them to get back into the game.
Because we started that game like incredibly well.
Oh, on fire. Ozil looked like he was just dictating everything from start to finish. It was fast. It was awesome.
I said this on Twitter too. Like, people use the phrase running the game or controlling the game a lot. Ozil controlled that game from pretty much beginning to end, you know.
100%.
So, I mean, Ian, he was at the heart of everything good that we were doing.
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that I think we've kind of been wanting to see from him for a long time now. I don't remember the last time he's been that dominant. I mean, he has his moments in most of the games he plays, but from start to finish, I don't remember the last time I've seen him be that dominant. And that's the player that we all really want to see. And honestly, I think that's the reason that he does get the criticism that he does in the media, because he'll go from putting on the display he did against Everton to, you know, only doing a couple things here and there. And that's, I think a lot of the criticism comes from, yeah, obviously the style of how he looks and everything, but also, you know, because he can be so dominant, you know. And I think he's, for him to play at that level, if he can play at that level, and it's not going to be every game, but, you know, consistently, man, that's what this side needs. That's what we lack. We lack that creativeness. So to see him do that, and yeah, it was against a struggling Everton team, but how many times have we seen a struggling team, you know, roll in and beat us? You know, they finally find their form that game. So it just seemed like the team had a different attitude, really led by him, that game was only going to go one way, and it was going to go in our favor no matter what.
Yeah, and the thing with him is he has such an understanding of space that I just don't think other players have. Like, he knows not only where he should be, he knows where everyone else should be. So he anticipates other players making runs that sometimes the players themselves don't know they're supposed to make. So he's almost ahead of where everyone else is supposed to be. But I mean, he was just on a mission. I think he had heard, whatever the criticism he's been getting in the media, you know, from pundits and people saying, oh, well, if Arsenal lose, I mean, Arsenal been winning games without him. So see, and I think he's just like, all right, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to show them why I'm Germany's number 10. I'm going to show them why I'm a World Cup winner. I'm going to show them why, you know, Jose Mourinho and Zinedine Zidane have called me the best number 10 in the world. And then, you know, the Alexis and Lacazette are so smart as players. They know, they adapt to what he's doing. You know, they see him making those runs, or they see where his eyes are going. They're like, all right, we're going to make this run because I know that this guy can get me the ball. And it's just, it's kind of like what you said, Ian. He gets criticism in part because of his languid body language, but also because this is what he can do. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, man, it was awesome. I mean, there's really no other way to explain it. And it's like I said, it's huge. And it may have been a conscious decision on his part that he's sick and tired of getting all the crap that he's been getting in the media. Maybe, hopefully that's what it is. And hopefully he's going to keep that and shit. You know what? If it's for him trying to get the money he wants to stay at Arsenal, fine, whatever. Just keep doing it. I don't care your reasons. Just keep going out there and dominating that.
Well, it's interesting, like the media reports, and Bill, I would imagine you'd have read some of these as well. But the media reports were first like, oh, he's definitely leaving. And then one newspaper quoted one of his friends and said, oh, no, he's tired of all these speculation. He loves it at Arsenal. Like, and it's just so hard to know what to believe at this point, isn't it?
Every time I open up Twitter, it's a different story. It's one paper saying one thing, another paper saying another thing. Then the Sun saying what the other paper said, then the Mirror saying what the Sun said the day after that. It's this back and forth where he's going to Manchester United. He's telling his teammates he's going to Manchester United. Then they have to release a Twitter statement saying it's not happening. Like, it's happened a couple of times already where he's had to like come out and say something because of how incessant the media was that he was going to go somewhere. And then it like just like put everything to sleep. You know, so I, you know, who knows what his intentions are. He could leave on a free at the end of the year. Or I also read that he bought a house, though, in London, and he likes it there. So that could be an added bonus to stay. So he looked very lively in this game against Everton. I hope that he has some added motivation to kind of prove everybody wrong and have added motivation to get the money that he deserves to play. Because when he's on like that and they're all moving forward with pace, and that passing ability, you know, as Ian said before, the Wenger ball truly comes alive. So I think, you know, having him, you know, have to come out on Twitter over and over again, though, might get a little tiresome. So I could see why maybe he would go somewhere else. But United would just bring as much pressure if he didn't do as well, though, correct? So I don't, you know, who knows what to believe, because it just goes back and forth so much.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the thing about the media with Arsenal that kind of goes back to really what I said at the beginning of the podcast, that the media does what is going to get Arsenal fans to click on it and retweet it and talk about it. So, again, they make shit up about the player on our side that's going to generate the most buzz. That's why they do it. I mean, honestly, yeah, let's be real. If he was going to go to United, the pressure would not be anywhere near the same as it is on him at Arsenal. I mean, when's the last time you heard anything negative about Pogba or about Lukaku or any of their big players? I mean, like, when's the last time you don't see negative stuff about them? You know, when Pogba got the first of the year, oh, he's adapting. But when Ozil went one game without doing anything, they're like, oh, he's shit. Arsenal, biggest bust in the Premier League history. Like, that's just the nature of the media. And, you know, he doesn't strike me as a type of player that would leave Arsenal just to get less pressure. He's, like Alex said, he's a World Cup winner. He's, you know, Germany's number 10. He's won the German Footballer of the Year award. it's just kind of, I don't know. The whole thing is just, it stinks to me of the media just trying to drive traffic again, and like they always do.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I think you can just take a look at the accolades he has and the people who have supported him versus the types of pundits who say he's no good. I mean, let's, you know, I mentioned Zidane and Mourinho. You know, look, Yogi Löw, the Germany coach, has said, you know, he's the best, you know, the best creator in the world and like a crucial part of our side. Like, all these people who genuinely know the game are the ones who constantly rate how good he is. And yet you have like pundits like, you know, I don't know, Jamie Redknapp or, you know, all these passion merchants on English TV, or they'll say, oh, he's not putting a shift in, you know, it doesn't come about in the big games and this and that. I mean, there's just a lack of subtlety in that sort of analysis. Cause you know, if Ozil's not doing something in a big game, that also means that other players aren't showing up and putting themselves in a position for him to do what he does best. That means that the midfield isn't existent, because if he has to drop deep to pick up the ball, you know, that in turn means other attacking players had to drop deep. So it just, they don't take into account all these factors. It's just easy to point at the guy and say, oh, see, he doesn't slide in all the time and he doesn't run around like a headless chicken. So, you know, that somehow means he's not trying, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And just, I've got, you know, one last thing for me on Ozil. It's like, you know, people talk about, wow, okay. I just completely lost my train of thought. It sounded really, really cool in my head, whatever I was going to say, and it's just gone. So we're going to forget that even happened.
That's okay. We're at that age, man. We're all at that age.
Yeah, it's happening.
I'll wake up at 3 a.m. and say, son of a bitch, that's what I was going to say on the podcast. And then I'll tweet it, and because it's at 3 a.m, nobody will see it. So
I'll retweet it for you.
Perfect. That's, knowing my luck, that's when I'll wake up. So,
but then I know we also had a Carabao Cup game yesterday. I'm still getting used to saying Carabao Cup because I don't know what Carabao is.
Energy drink, I believe.
Is that actually what it is? Oh, I thought.
No. I think it is. They're one of Chelsea's sponsors, and you see it on the billboards all the time. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Okay, either way, either way, we had that cup game yesterday, and for about, I don't know what, like 85 minutes, it was one of the more painful watches that you'll ever have, where Norwich was deservedly up on us 1-0. And then an interesting thing happened. We subbed on a young fellow named Eddie Nketiah, and who knows, we might have just seen the emergence of a potential Arsenal cult hero.
The thing that's the most impressive for me about that kid is that if you look at him at every single level that he's played, there's one thing he does. He scores goals. Mm-hmm. The kid pops up in the right spots at the right time and puts it home. And you know what? That's exactly what a striker needs to do. You know, I'm not going to go overboard and say that we've got the next great striker coming through our ranks. The kid's only 18. Let's give him time. But there's a hell of a lot of potential there. And to do that, and yes, it's the Carabao Cup, but that's still a pretty big, stage to step in and do that in at the time of the game that he did that. So I think it's only shows huge, like really promising signs for him.
I enjoyed seeing him be able to score. I follow a guy on Twitter who's connected with the youth set up over at Arsenal, and very informative about Eddie coming up through the ranks. And Ian is right. One of the things I think he tweeted out, it was either a couple of days ago or might have been after the match, was that all Nketiah does is score goals. That's it. It's like the ball's a magnet to him in some way. He always seems to pop up around the six with some sort of goal. And both of his goals, I mean, what did it take, 15 seconds for him to score in that game when he came on? I think they timed it. It was like 15 seconds.
Like that, yeah.
15 seconds, his first touch of the game.
First touch of the game. I believe his celebration walking back kind of, I think, alluded to that. AJ, you're right. And a bullet header you know, taking the glory away from Giroud there, in a way, because that thing was a rocket off of his forehead. And it was about the delivery as well. But just what a debut. I'm happy for the kid. excuse me. I think it's a perfect competition to get him going. I'd like to even maybe see him. Can he do Europa? Did you have to put him on the list for that? I'm not really sure.
I think he's on the squad list for Europa.
I think so too.
I would like to see him play in that competition. And then if he even does well there, I mean, it's nice to know that if players leave, maybe there's some talent there that can step up and fill the void as long as they're played in the correct position, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of, yeah, Alex Gredman, I know you're kind of jumping in there on Eddie.
No, I was just going to say, like, that's why I want to see us stay in this competition. Like, I saw people say, oh, you know, if we get out of this, it's one less series of games to worry about. I'm like, I'm not worried about the squad thinning out because of these games. We're not playing any of the regulars in these games. These are the opportunities where you see what a Reese Nelson or a Maitland-Niles or Niketia or Joe Willock can do, or, you know, getting Debushi back to full fitness. Like, these are the games you utilize for that, to build that depth and to build your future stars. Like, I say, like, you take this train as far as you can take it, you know? You know, obviously, if we get dropped out of the cup at some point, I'm not going to be brokenhearted, but I think it's really short-sighted to say, oh, I hope we don't make it just because it's too many games. Like, no, really all we have to focus on is the Premier League, and then, you know, we're already basically through the Europa League group stage. We're going to qualify. So why not see what you can do in this cup? And we got another opportunity with the Europa League game next week, I think it is, with Red Star at home, where you can play some more of these guys because you're pretty much qualified. But going back to Niketia, it was just good to see the Emirates alive, chanting his name, that buzz of positive momentum that I think is lacking, because the fans want this kind of new cult hero to cling to. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, everything you said there is pretty spot on, man. Like, we're always looking, as fans, we're always looking for that cult hero. I mean, that's, fans love that shit. Like, that's, they'll eat that up. But as far as the competitions for me, I've seen people say, well, you know, when you make it to a certain point in the Carabao Cup, then you need to start playing some first teamers to make sure, you know, if you're going to go for it, you got to go for it. I don't care. I don't care if we win these competitions. I don't care if we lose in the semis. It doesn't matter to me. What I want to see is the players that we have in there right now, the guys that we're trying to get back to full fitness, and the kids that are trying to break through. It provides such an incredible opportunity for them that they haven't gotten in past years when we're playing in the Champions League. Because, you know, we're not going to give those kids a chance in the Champions League, and rightfully so. It's a much more important competition. So for me, that's the great part about it, is we're playing with house money. I don't care how we finish. I just want to see players get back to form, and I want to see the kids really start to take their game to a next level, because I think those opportunities have really been what's lacking for our youth players in the last several years. And I think that has a big impact on why we haven't seen a ton of guys break through.
No, I think that's a great point, that we haven't seen that youth emergence lately, because there, like you said, there haven't been these games for them to make their mark. But now all of a sudden I think we're in the quarterfinals now of this cup. So whenever the draw comes, you're probably going to get a Chelsea or a City or a United. Why not see what these young guys can do against them? Like, this is how you give them opportunities. So I look at it as nothing but a positive. I know Spurs got dropped out of the cup today, of course, because Spurs don't win trophies. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you said, Ian, it's house money. Why not see what we can do? And then, you know, if we get dropped, we get dropped. But if not, it's a chance at a trophy, it's a chance at experience, and it's a chance at building fitness. I don't see why that would be a bad thing to anyone. What about you, Bill?
I think it's a great thing. That my apprehension back when I was saying I kind of didn't want to play in the competition, I hope they didn't make it, was because of, I honestly thought he was going to play a senior squad on a Thursday and then play him again on the weekend. I didn't really know he was going to give this many youngsters a chance. and even this many youngsters looking this good. It was nice to see him give them a chance. It was nice to see him make that substitution and get rewarded for doing it. I think they should definitely play throughout the cup. I would love to see them play against the more superior quote unquote sides. And I think that what he's doing and getting the right mix and flow is working. And this is going to sound crazy, but Debushi, I don't really think is that bad. I mean, he's bad, but he's like not like super awful though, right? Like it's not like he's like super bad, right?
I don't think he's been bad at all, honestly. Considering not having played for what, 2 years, right?
Yeah, it's been a long time. And, you know, people forget, I mean, again, this is past, but he was first choice for France for a good number of while, you know, and over Sanya as well. So, I think having him as an option isn't necessarily too bad of one. And he looked good as well, you know, in that other game. Some of these other players like Walcott, like I don't think that they looked very, very good. But the youngsters, I like them playing. I like them getting a shot. And I definitely think that they deserve to continue to go, especially throughout that cup.
I think it's well said right there. It's kind of one of these things where especially it helps that we can rotate these squad because I know we've got, you know, we do have a pretty tough stretch of games coming up. And we're not going to get into those, you know, really too much today. But, you know, those are the kind of games that we do need to have our full squad, our first 11 out there and playing well. You know, for me, that means that Saturday's game is going to be it's going to be pretty important to me, because ideally we are going to see that first 11. I'm come rolling through again, same way we saw it at Everton, I would imagine. I mean, we've got Swansea on Saturday. You know, it's not anything that should be it shouldn't be a tough game. We should be able to roll like we did last Saturday. Where do you guys think we come out with that game, Bill? How about you, bud?
Well, I would like to be able to see it with ease, but unfortunately, that's not going to be possible. But I think that it should be an easy game. I'm hoping that if he plays the same lineup as he played this past weekend against Everton, it should be a good game. I think probably like a 3-0 or a 4-1 in case they let in a goofball goal as usual. That may happen because they seem to be giving up a lot of goals away, I think it is this year. I know they've been giving up a lot of goals regardless, but I think away more so. So I think I think it should be an easy game. I think they should control the game. I want to see the highlights of Ozil because if he was firing again, I'm excited to see what they can do with all things moving forward. So I'm going for a 3-0 or a 4-1 Arsenal.
I'm with you there on that enthusiasm. I think we should deal with them no problem. I don't know that I'm going to quite go to 4, but I like 3 as a number. I like 3-1. Like you said, we have been giving up a lot of goals. It's going to be curious to see his selection of the back three. You know, does he go Mertesacker and Koscielny and who'd they have last week? Was it Monreal?
Yeah. It'll
be interesting to see if he goes with the same three. I think it's pretty likely that he will, but you know, I think that's probably our best option. But you know, he likes to mess around with some stuff. But really, you know, for me, I want to see that front three dominate again. I want to see them run riot and I want to see him tear them apart. It's going to be, but like you said, Bill, I mean, are we even going to be able to see it? Because it's not really on TV for us unless we wanted to pay all that money to sign up for that bullshit.
And NBC Gold?
Name. Yeah, that's what they call it.
Quick little snippet about NBC Gold real quick. On the App Store on iTunes, 616 reviews. It's got a 1.2 rating as an app. And that means that roughly that's 70 some percent. So over 450 people gave this a lower than average rating. One review, which I like, that brought up a very good point. with it is, you know, some people were blaming like some networks and stuff, and this was just on NBC. This was an NBC decision to pull that EPL extra time away from people like DirecTV, like me, who could just turn it on 490 in HD and catch this Arsenal Swansea quote unquote meaningless match, you know, that they need to shoo away. But one guy said, you know, not only do they put this behind a paywall, but they actually have the audacity to charge for each individual sport. You want soccer, $50. You want rugby, $60. You want cycling, $30. You want motorcycle racing, yep, you guessed it, another $10. He said at the end, I'm surprised they don't charge you another $20 to come to your house and kick you in the groin. So, I mean, like, you know, I have screenshotted a bunch of these, but that was the best one. But a lot of them, you know, I was forced to download this to watch Manchester City versus Stoke. So this isn't just like Arsenal boys complaining, Kyle Martino and NBC and all you guys. Like, this is legit. Paid $50. It didn't work on the iPhone 6S. She tried to watch it on an iPhone 7, only got audio with a black screen. Went to an old school iPad mini, got the game for 2 minutes, and then it was blacked out. And there's at least 30 to 40 that I read through real quickly that had that same thing. So it's trash. They're taking advantage of it. I don't like it. I'm going to have to like rig up a system again. Like, this is 2008 or some, you know, so something so far back.
I know. We're going to have to find a stream somewhere. Which is so annoying, because that means you're watching it like some shitty stream that cuts in and out every 15 seconds. But
well, don't you dare put one of those streams up on your work computer, because the next thing you know, the next day you're getting called into.
Yeah, you got all sorts of viruses and yeah. 50,000 pop-ups. But no, I definitely share your frustration on that. I mean, as usual, TV networks are taking advantage of an audience that they know want the product. But they're thinking, hey, how can we make a little more money out of this? But I think it hurts them more than helps, because I don't think a lot of people are buying it, honestly. So, you know, going back to the game, just to get a quick prediction in, I guess. Ian, I like you said 3-1?
Yeah, 3-1.
I think I'm going to go with that. I see us giving up a crap goal. I could see it happening similar to what Monreal did against Everton. I don't know what the fuck he was doing, but playing a back pass to – for no particular reason. And then I see Lacazette scoring 2, and I see Ramsey scoring 1. So
goals. I like Lacazette to get his hat trick.
Oh, you had to one up me,
didn't you? I was going to say that. That's what I was thinking. Then you're like, you know what? I like him for 2. I'm like, you know what? No, he's going to get that hat trick. He needs one.
Oh, man.
You want to go that specific? Yes, I will one up you. I'll probably be wrong. We know that. I usually am, but... No.
The point is, you went balls to the wall there.
I will take a shot. I'm feeling good right now. It's this emotional roller coaster that Arsenal puts us on week in and week out, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, you guys have any other, you know, last comments? I'm kind of, you know, we were kind of all over the place on a wide range of stuff tonight. Any final thoughts on any of that, guys?
I think you got to get 3 points this weekend. There's no excuse. Because the next 2 league games after this are really tough, and I know we'll kind of get into those next week, but no excuse not to get 3 points, and then take care of business in the Europa League. I mean, that really should be a game you rack up the goals and then be able to get some more youngsters in there. What about you, Bill?
I'm looking forward to hopefully reading about them taking 3 points and scoring some goals and doing well. You know, I'm not going to pay this money if it's not going to work. So like, I need to find a decent stream that's going to hopefully get me this game, because I could actually watch it in its entirety this weekend. And I was frustrated to find out that it wasn't going to be on, but I'm thinking that they can control the game a little bit. I'm predicting Lacazette 2 goals and Ozil 1 goal. As long as that front 3 play again, that's my prediction, at least for the 3-0. One that I predicted. So I'm hoping for that. I'm hoping I get to see it and we can enjoy it and talk about it next week.
Yeah, no, I'm with you guys. I mean, like Alex said, it's vital to get these 3 points this week. We're going to need it because of that, you know, the next couple of games in the league after that. So
yep.
Get in there, get, you know, you know what, even if it's a 1-0 win, whatever, get that 3 points. You know, I know we're kind of thinking it's going to be a pretty big, comfortable win. You know, it is a Premier League, and you never know. But regardless of how the game goes, you got to get those three points. I don't care how we get them. I'd love to see a bunch of goals or see a bunch of highlights of goals on Twitter. But 3 points, that's the only thing that matters this weekend. So
cheers to that.
So yes, Alex, let's run through those locations and where everybody can find us.
Right? Yeah, this is the one thing I do well. So I know you can find Bill at AFC Gunner O. You can find Ian at Gunners Fan 6. You can find myself at UF Gunner AJ. This is all on Twitter, by the way. And then obviously you can find the podcast at Eurosnob Pod. Find us on Facebook because I try to post everything there as soon as it gets uploaded. Facebook.com/Eurosnobpod. You know, obviously, if you're listening on Podomatic, great. If you listen on iTunes, that's great too. But do your best to spread the word. We really appreciate it. Obviously, the more people listen, the more we can bring you great content or even satisfactory content. I'm not going to say it's great.
I will take satisfactory. I
strive for satisfactory and not much else. So, but in all seriousness, like us on Facebook because, you know, the more we get our web traffic up, the more hits we get. It's just better for everyone. And it's good for my self-esteem because I like seeing numbers higher than 50. So please.
From what I could find out, it looked like we had, you know, our U.S. national team episode. From what I can see, because then iTunes doesn't really give you a number on how many listens or downloads and everything. But from the stuff that I was able to dig up, it looked like that was our most popular episode, our most listened to episode. So guys, I really want to say thank you for that. And as you know, it's pretty cool. You know,
let's not have to wait to miss a World Cup. let's keep it going. But,
I'm with you there. And another thing too, you know, a little bit of a shameless plug here. I did do a little blog thing back on that blog website. What are we at? I forget the URL. So it's on our Twitter, our Twitter bio for the Eurosnob Pod handle. I'm going to try and do that some more. It's just kind of cool. I mean, I don't know that anybody really reads it, but I think it sounds kind of cool. So,
I read it, Ian. Don't worry.
And that means a lot.
We read it.
My mother said it was exceptional. So you know what?
It's all that matters.
Man, my mom never says anything I do is acceptable. What's going on here? I don't even think she listens to this.
Well, I think my parents listened. I don't know if they listened to very many of them, but they listened last week because my cousin was on the show. Like, oh, your cousin's on. We have to listen to it. I'm like, oh, really? I do this always. Every week and you don't listen. But when he does it once, absolutely. We'll listen to it together. So here's to hoping that they hear this and give me shit for it.
And I will say, just you know, for future audience knowledge, like we do plan on getting into a lot of the stuff going on with U.S. soccer right now, the president's search, the, you know, proposed new structures, all this and that. So it's interesting times ahead. So definitely looking forward to getting into that as well. But right now it's full sail ahead with Arsenal.
Absolutely. And on that note, I'm going to say thank you for tuning in for all of us here with the Eurosnob podcast. And we will be back with you next week to recap the two games we have this week and preview our games against Manchester City and Tottenham. So come on, you Gunners. Let's get it done.